Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Well, when we speak about moving on, typically people talk colloquially about moving on as in don't be stuck. So when we've lost, most of us tend to get stuck. This is very natural. We literally become sort of frozen in time. This is true with trauma. If I went around and said, okay, everybody tell me where you were, depending on your age, some of you may not have been alive, but where were you on 9/11? Where were you when you heard Indira Gandhi had been assassinated? Where were you when you heard John F. Kennedy had been assassinated? Where, you know, whatever, depending on your culture and your age, there's going to be different moments in our collective history. But where every one of us remembers, where were you when the Challenger went down? You know, that decades later, people remember, oh, I was there. I was there. I was with those people. The moment is as though it was frozen in time. Now, that's very natural. There is nothing wrong with it. This is how our brain works with lots of emotion, with very, very strong emotion, either very good emotion or sad emotion. What happens, the problem becomes, is it stays. Meaning, it's not just that I remember where I was, but I can't move beyond that point. So I was left by death, by divorce, by someone's choice, by abandonment. And yeah, for the first few minutes, hours, even days, sometimes weeks, depending on who it was and what the relationship was, my life has frozen, literally. This is very natural. We then start a period of figuring out how do I pick up one foot and move it in front of the other again. And again, this is more or less difficult depending on what the relationship was. But slowly, slowly, we never forget the person. We never stop loving them. We never lose the sadness at them having left us. But we're able to continue on in our life. Not just physically, not just get in the shower and feed ourselves, but actually continue on in our unfolding, in our opening, in our connecting with the universe, in our spiritual life. To be able to trust the universe again, to love again. Whether it's romantically, whether it's a friend, whether it's whatever it may be, but to trust the universe again. And so when we talk about moving on, usually that's what it means, is that I get beyond that moment of being paralyzed, frozen in time. Now, as you said, can we ever feel that again? Well, sure, it'll be different, which is beautiful. Because remember, I still have the love from the previous one. That cap's already off. That love is already in me. I don't need that off again. Unless I have suppressed and repressed myself so completely that I'm denying the love I felt. Because the sadness at the loss of the love is too much for me to bear. That's what we do. Fine, forget it, I didn't love you anyway. I hated you, in fact. I hate you now. This is, again, normal, natural, but not something you want to let live for very long in you. Because what that does is it pushes the love down. Because the loss is too painful, and in response to the pain, I do anger instead. Anger is just pain externalized. I'm feeling pain inside. I don't want to feel it inside. I'm going to take it out on you. In a very basic level, that's what anger is. So if we find ourselves living in anger at the one who left us, what it means is that we are protecting ourselves from the pain of the loss. And the only way to really heal is to allow ourselves to feel the pain. So again, anger's fine. It's part of the grieving process. It's very natural. But don't allow that to be the end of your grieving process. Realize it's a phase, but allow yourself to move beyond it into the fullness of the experience, whatever it may be. And then, yeah, you'll love again. Not the same way. Not the same way. This is life. Every relationship we have is different. Everyone we love pulls off sort of a different cap of love within us, which is beautiful. It means love more, love as much as you can. Get all those caps off. Get that love manufacturing factory to work overtime. That's the point of life. So yes, you will love again. Not the same way. But realize that that's fully okay. What you had, what you felt, was precious, regardless of how it ended up. It was precious because it allowed you to feel love. Anything that allows you to feel love is precious. Savor the love. Don't cap it back. But don't wallow in the drama of when it was uncapped. That's what we do. Instead of allowing ourselves to keep feeling the love, we go into the drama of who uncapped it, when they uncapped it, what it was like after that. That's not what's important. What's important is the love. So allow yourself to keep feeling it. And then move on also, so that you can get the rest of them. The rest of those geysers of love, sources of love, uncapped. It's the point of life.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM-FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Alaya, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. Searching for a guru. And if we have yet yet to find a guru? Have we not fulfilled our purpose? And of course, the unspoken parts of the question being, how do we find then one then? How do we know? The teachings teach us that when the disciple is ready, the guru will come. And yet, I think if one is permitted to add cultural context into timeless teachings, I would add a little bit of cultural context to that today, because I think that sadly what's happening today is people are looking for something in a guru different from what people were looking for in a guru perhaps when the scriptures were written, and even than that which is really what the guru's role is. And so these days, I'm not so convinced that our lack of ability to find a guru is due entirely to the lack of a guru, but much more to our own mental confusion about what it is that we want and what it is that we're looking for and what it is we're ready to do in that relationship. So I would add that on as a current day cultural aspect of that. And what I mean by that in specifics is a guru is one who brings light. That is the definition of the word. The Sanskrit word literally means the remover of darkness. Gu is darkness, ru is the remover of darkness. The guru is the one who removes our darkness. The guru is not, by definition, the one who makes sure that our children pass exams that they haven't studied for. The guru is not the one to make sure that because we're working really hard, we become millionaires or billionaires. The guru is not the one who makes sure that no one we love ever gets sick and dies. Those tend to be the sort of things that people ask from a guru these days. My kid's got his exams next month. Please, 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 could you, you know, pray for him? And, well, has he been studying? Well, he's not such a good studier. I keep telling him to study. He likes to, you know, play football instead. But if with your blessings, he'll be fine. Or my business isn't going well. I don't know what's wrong with me. My brother's business is going well. My cousin brother's business is going well. My neighbor's businesses are going well. Can you bless me that my business should also go well? Or my loved one is sick. The doctors say they have a month to live or 2 weeks to live or 6 months to live. Please do something. Please, please bless them and do something. And these are the most common categories of things. Obviously, there's variation, but this is the most common category of what you hear. It's success. I want success. Whether I'm working for it or not working for it, either way, I want it. And even if I am working for it, but it's not coming, I want you to wave your magic wand and make it come. I want things to go the way that I want. Please, could you talk to my husband or talk to my wife and tell them to do what I say and, you know, be the type of person I want them to be and, you know, help me with the dishes and give me more money and, you know, tell my kids to be obedient. And these are the sorts of things that come up. And it's not that there's anything wrong with any of these. Traditionally, the guru plays such a central role in the family that, yeah, of course, when little things come up in the family, rather than going to psychiatrists or psychologists or counselors, traditionally people went to the guru. Even for small things, our kids misbehaving, what to do. But that wasn't the central role of the guru. We have a guru to bring light to our darkness. Therefore, sure, when I've got all of these other things going on, I will also go to the guru, because the guru is the central axis of my life. But not, I'm guru shopping for the one who will give me what I want. And that tends to be what we see a lot these days. And sadly, you know, when on the flip side of this, when you read stories or hear about the very rare but nonetheless very loud scandals that happen, what's interesting to me is that people will say, oh my God, I can't believe that this guru was caught, you know, with diamonds and gold and land and, you know, a foreign bank account and whatnot. And you say, well, why'd you make him your guru? Like, what was it that attracted you to him? Oh, well, he promised that he was going to, you know, make my business number one. He promised that he was going to, you know, give me success in business. Well, you realize when you look at that deeply that, well, I was guru shopping for someone who was promising me material success. Someone who was promising me paper and gold and, you know, rocks and paper that symbolizes money. That's not what the guru does. And so naturally, if I'm finding someone who's saying, yeah, yeah, come to me, I'll make you rich, it shouldn't surprise me that much later to find out that the guru himself or herself was making themselves rich. The guru is one who brings us light. And if that's what we're looking for, and if what we realize is that our frustration at our jobs, our frustration at not being as rich as our cousins or our brothers or our neighbors or our fantasy of how rich we should be, our frustration at our children or our spouses not acting how we want them to, that all of that is due to the darkness in which we live. Meaning, regardless of how enlightened you may be, you still have ups and downs and things happen. There's success, there's failure, there's sickness, there's health. But our reaction to that, our frustration at that, our anxiety at that, our anger at that, our need for a guru to change that outer situation so we can be in peace, that's darkness. Not darkness that's evil, not darkness that's bad, but in Indian tradition, the darkness is the darkness of ignorance. It's not a sense of you're a bad person. We don't believe really in bad people. At the core, everyone is pure and perfect and divine and holy, because we've been created not just by God but of God. But in that illusory connection with our body and identification with the body, now suddenly how much I have, how high my ranking is, whether I'm fulfilled in my vision of success or not, that becomes critical to my sense of self, because I am this body. That's the darkness the guru removes. You're not the body. Now, it's not always fun. It doesn't always feel good. Anybody who's a parent or a grandparent or a babysitter even knows that when kids come in from playing outside in the dirt, young kids, and you say, ah, it's bath time, you're filthy, come, we're going to get you into a nice warm bath and make you clean. What do kids do? They run around the house naked, right? Kids, for some reason, universally, run away from bath time. No matter how dirty they are, no matter how covered in mud they are, I have yet to see a child when the mother or father says, "Oh God, you're covered in dirt, come, let me put you in the bath." I have yet to see a child say, "Thanks, Mom, that would be great if you could just get all this dirt off me." There's something about that which covers us when we're used to it that we love it. I mean, otherwise getting in a bath and getting the dirt off should be universally pleasurable. As adults, we enjoy it. But there's something about the innocence of youth, of young children, that it's like, no, just as I am, this dirt symbolizes my freedom in the mud. I got this dirt through running in the mud and, you know, doing somersaults in the mud and rolling in the mud. And that's a symbol of freedom. It's a symbol of fun. This mud is me, Mom. This mud is my fun. And so, of course, they don't want it washed off. In the same way, but on a subtler and more deep level, that darkness which covers our light, which you would think we'd be so grateful to have the guru remove, we tend to act very much like children, not wanting to get put in the bathtub. We're very attached to that dirt. We're very attached to our egos. We're very attached to our sense of how things should be, what we want, what we need. We're very attached to that. And so when our guru comes in and starts to remove that, a lot of us really do react like young kids. No, 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 you know, I don't want to be in the bath. And we run away, either physically or just internally. And so when you talk about looking for a guru, you have to really be clear. Am I looking for a money manager? Am I looking for someone to give me tips in the stock market? Am I looking for a family counselor? What am I looking for here? Because there are people whose jobs are money managers. There are people whose jobs are to give you tips in the stock market. There are people whose jobs it is to, you know, teach you how to get your kid to sit down and study and how to apply for the right universities. That's not what we go to the guru for. When we go to the guru, we should go for one thing and one thing only, which is light. We should go to the guru with, "Oh guru, oh my guru, I'm covered in darkness. I cannot see my light. I'm covered in my ego. I'm covered in ignorance. I'm covered with my false identification with this body, this false sense of who I think I am, what I think I need. Oh guru, remove that. Show me the light. Let me live in the light." And if that's what we're yearning for, we will find a guru. Doesn't have to be today. Might be tomorrow, might be next week, it might be next year. In the meantime, there's lots of books and even video these days and audio and all sorts of ways to learn from gurus who are no longer with us if you haven't found one who clicks with you. But if you find that you're someone who's been looking for a guru for a really long time and you've been to many of them and nothing clicks, I would turn the investigation a little bit inside just to re-ask yourself, what is it I'm looking for? What are my criteria in finding a guru? Because it's not, you know, going to find a guru is not like going out to find the perfect dress. It's not like, well, you know, it's for evening wear, so it should be black, but it's summertime, so it should be kind of lightweight. And, well, I'm on this diet, so it should, you know, show off my new figure. And I've got really nice calves, so it definitely shouldn't come below my knees. And, you know, that's not how you shop for a guru. Might be how you shop for a dress or a shirt or a pair of pants or a sweater. But we don't go into it with a list. We go into it with one yearning and one yearning only, which is, for God's sakes, show me some light. Show me who I am. The divinity of who I am. The wholeness of who I am. Not give me things so I feel whole. It's almost the exact opposite. Show me the wholeness of who I am. If the guru is one to whom we keep turning for more and more things, all it's doing is perpetuating our illusion that we're not whole. You're whole. That's the light we want, is to be able to see who we are, that truth. And remember, of course, that you have an inner guru as well. I strongly recommend an outer one, because the inner one tends to frequently get really easily hijacked by our ego, and it becomes really difficult to tease apart what's ego and what's inner guru. But in the meantime, till you find one, go within, read, listen to talks, watch videos, whatever there may be. There have been so many enlightened masters. But start somewhere. Don't wait till you find the right guru to start your path. Start the path, and the guru will appear, for sure.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. It has been said that spiritual growth and finding our inner peace is the highest form of service we can offer the world. It is also said that we should serve in a more physical and practical way on the planet as well. How can we find the right balance between the silence and the solitude that is so often conducive to spiritual progress and interacting in the physical world with all of its politics to do more tangible seva? So, it's actually not an either or. The question at its core really says, how am I able to to be beneficial to the world through my meditation and the peace I attain, and also beneficial to the world through my service. How to do both? Well, it's interestingly, they're not separate things. It's not either I'm doing this or I'm doing that. Ultimately, what the goal of our spiritual practice is, the goal of our silence, the goal of our meditation, is not just something we do at one time of day and then other times of day we do something else. The goal ultimately is that my meditation should be so strong and so deep that it actually stays with me. So you eat a meal, you feel very satiated, you feel very full, and then there's a very direct relationship between the amount of time since you have eaten and the fullness of your stomach. The longer since you've eaten, the emptier your stomach, the hungrier you are. Spiritual practice shouldn't be like that. It's not about I do my meditation to fill my stomach, and then as the minutes or hours go by since I've meditated, I'm slowly getting emptier and emptier and emptier. And then I go back and meditate again and get full. And then I go out and I use this energy and get emptier and emptier. Ideally, that's not how it should be. The meditation that I do is something that should stay with me. Yes, we have to keep doing it. Yes, we do it every morning. We do it every evening. But it's not about doing it because my stomach, metaphorically, is empty and therefore I have to fill it again. The experience that I have in meditation of the truth of who I am, which is one with the universe, is something that should stay with me. If you fall in love with someone in the morning, you don't forget during the day that you're in love. You may get busy, absolutely, but in your mind, you know you are in love. Now, there may be a time of the day when it's just the two of you together and you're able to just look in his or her eyes and be in love. And the rest of the day, you don't necessarily have the time to, you know, take your mala and be chanting his or her name on your mala. But you don't forget that you're in love. It's as though there were a stream or a river that flowed through you all day long, no matter what you did. And that love was the stream that flowed through you, regardless of where you are. And that's what meditation should be like. So if we're looking for metaphors much more than the metaphor of a full stomach that gets empty, it should be the metaphor of the falling in love and then going out to the office. So yeah, you get engaged in the day, you're engaged in your service, but you know you're in love. Every minute, every moment, it's swimming through you, informing, impacting all of how you live during the day. It's not like when you pull up at home in the night, then you remember, oh yeah, wait, I'm in love, I totally forgot. You remember it during the day too. And so our meditation and the impact that it has on us is something that impacts, informs, flows through our service during the day. That's ultimately what is the difference really between seva and volunteering. Volunteering is great. It's a wonderful thing to do. I'm always in favor of people all over the world doing as much volunteer work as they can helps us on so many levels. But it's different than seva in that volunteering is very, very good for my emotional well-being. So for example, if you're depressed, one of the best ways to ease yourself out of depression is service of others. Fantastic antidote to depression. Get yourself involved in a project, a program, a volunteer organization that is making sandwiches for poor people, that is distributing blankets in, you know, to the homeless at night, that is working with children, working with battered women. But seva is impacting me on a spiritual level, not just emotional, not just psychological. Seva's changing who I am spiritually. Both of them benefit the world. The hungry people, the ailing people, the children, the women, the environment. Doesn't much matter to them whether I've served them in a spirit of volunteerism or I've served them in a spirit of seva. They've gotten a sandwich. They've gotten a blanket. They've gotten an education. They've gotten help from someone who cares. In either case, here I am as a caring individual. But to me, it's a huge difference. To my spiritual growth, it's a huge difference. Seva is a spiritual practice, which means it is not different, not separate from my meditation on the cushion in the morning, my yoga on the mat. Seva is a very natural and automatic outcome of my meditation and my yoga. It is meditation, it is yoga, but just on a different mat, on a different cushion. But it stems out of the exact same experience of being one with the world. And it brings us the same experience as meditation connects us to the divine and therefore to all of that which is divine. That's what seva does. Volunteerism or humanitarian work could be me over here, the one who has, serving you over there, the ones who don't have. I am the giver, you are the receiver. I am the provider, you are the recipient. But seva, I'm serving myself. There's no distinction. There's no giver over here. There's no one who has over here. The divine grace is flowing through us. It's flowing through me in one way, through you in another way, but connecting us. My service is the channel through which grace is flowing between us. That service is the channel for grace. And that grace is not flowing from me to you. It's flowing through me and through you. Like a river flowing through both banks. One bank is me, one bank is you. And flowing through us is this river of grace. And the service is that river. So if I'm talking about seva, it's not about do I meditate or do I serve. It's about sometimes my meditation is with my legs crossed and my eyes closed and I'm sitting in a dark room. And sometimes my meditation is with my legs straight and I'm standing or I'm sitting at a computer or I'm doing something with my hands. Not a distinction other than the most you know, superficial of, are my legs crossed or are they straight or am I standing or am I sitting or, you know, but it's all meditation. It's all yoga. And ultimately that's the goal. And that's what's most beneficial, both to the world as well as to us. Because while a sandwich or a blanket or a school might be the same on a literal level, whether someone gets it by seva or someone gets it by philanthropy or volunteerism or humanitarian work, on a physical level it's the same. But on an energetic level it's actually very different. And being served by someone who is serving you as the self gives you not just a sandwich, not just a blanket, not just a school, not just a tree, not just a toilet, but it brings that flow of grace to you through that channel of service. And so you're actually gaining much more than the physical benefit. And those of us who are giving are actually gaining. Because that grace only flows through that river of service. If I decide, well, I'm just going to sit here and soak up the grace without serving, what you find is it dries up actually really quickly. The service is that channel for the grace. And if I cut off the channel, I cut myself off from grace. And so we serve as a flow of grace. And yeah, the meditation connects us. It charges our batteries. So we do both, but with an awareness that ultimately at the highest level, it's really the same.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. How come the people we love the most are the ones who give us the most sadness? Because other people don't have the power. The rest of the world is just doing its thing. We're only deeply attached to what our loved ones do. For most of us, we may turn on the news, you may read the paper, you may hear about, you know, something that happened to someone, and for a moment, you become a little sad, but it doesn't keep you up at night. Several years ago, Pooja Swamiji and I were flying from Lisbon, Portugal, to Tenerife, Spain, in the Canary Islands. And our flight was going via Madrid in Spain. So the flight went from Lisbon to Madrid and then Madrid to Tenerife. The day we were supposed to fly from Lisbon to Madrid and to Tenerife, there was a plane crash in the Madrid airport. Spanair plane crashed, about 150 people died. Naturally, our flight from Lisbon was delayed. When we get to Madrid, of course, our onward flights are delayed, everything's delayed. Okay. We finally arrive in Tenerife like a day late. And when we get there, the people are shocked. People are deeply, deeply, deeply upset. And everybody asks Pooja Swamiji, can we have moments of prayer? Can we do puja for those who have lost their lives? And of course we did. We had a 3 or 4 day trip to Tenerife. And we spent 2 days doing prayers and pujas and silence for the people who had lost their lives. But after about 2 days of this, I thought, this is so interesting. 150 people, because nobody in the Tenerife group knew anybody who had been on the plane. So it wasn't like actually members of the community or their families had been on the plane. I asked everybody, did you know someone on the plane? No. And I started really thinking, I'm a psychology student, and so people's psychology really interests me. And we were also sad, of course. I mean, plane crashes are sad things. But in the 2 days since that plane had crashed, tens of thousands of children had died of starvation. Thousands and thousands of people had died due to lack of water. I didn't know that at the time. I wasn't doing work for water then. Now I know that. But so many thousands of people, I was already very concerned about the tens of thousands dying of hunger and what our food choices do, how our food choices are pulling food out of their mouths. So I was very interested in, why is it that 150 unknown random people in a plane that crashed in Madrid have turned this community into people who are so shocked, so sad, who can only think about doing puja, doing prayers. And those tens of thousands of children, nobody even thinks about them. Nobody even tries to save their life. Their lives are savable. If we all became vegetarian, they wouldn't die of starvation. And what I realized in thinking very deeply about it is the plane crash people are people just like us. It wasn't our family on the plane, but it could have been. Everyone living in Tenerife had been on that airplane. They'd all transited through Madrid, some of them last week. That could have been us. And when it's somebody who could have been us, our people, there is a sense of connection that we don't experience in people we don't consider ours. So none of us, no matter how wealthy or non-wealthy we are, none of us, chances are, runs any risk of dying of starvation. We're all going to get enough to eat to sustain our lives. So those children who are dying of starvation are not just like us. Hence, the connection isn't there, hence the compassion isn't there. But spiritual practice, of course, is all about, how can my compassion extend? How can my consciousness extend? How can my life extend in such a way that I really live this world is one family teaching. So that's an aspect of why it is and how it is that people who are either actually close to us or just people who could have been close to us impact us in a very different way. Those who are the absolute closest to us, our family members, are the ones who hold the most power over our emotions, because they are the ones in whom we have hooked our happiness. We've given them the power. They're not making us sad. What it is I've decided that because you are my husband, or you are my child, or you are my brother, you need to do what I say. You need to act the way I want. And when you don't, I become upset. I have taken my peace and my joy, and I have hooked it into your actions. You have made me angry. No, I have not. You haven't made me angry. I have made myself angry. Because I have expectations, and an expectations with attachments. I have an expectation of how you will act, and I am very attached to that expectation coming true. So expectations we all have. But the level of attachment to the expectation. So yes, we all assume our loved ones are going to treat us with love. They're not going to betray us. They're not going to harm us. They're not going to cheat on us. But our level of attachment to that is what determines my own inner sadness. If you act the way I want you to act, then I'm happy. And if you don't, then no. That's not a way to live. That's not a stable life. That's why we need to take those hooks out of other people, bring them back, and realize the only one I have any control over is myself, my reactions. And so rather than focus my energy on trying to change people around me, I'm going to focus my energies on changing my reaction. That power you have. Aapko koi dukh nahi dete. Apne ko dukh dete. So the minute you decide no more, I'm done. My happiness, my peace is more important to me than what you do. Yeah, I'd like you to do what I want, fine. But if you don't, I'm not going to lose my peace over it because my peace is more important to me. Yeah, I'd like you to clean up your clothes. I'd like you to put them away. I'd like you to help with the dishes. I'd like you to come home on time. I'd like you to do your homework. But my peace is the most important thing to me. And I will not sacrifice my peace, my joy, for your grades, your clothes, your coming home on time. Because that's my most precious possession. Because without peace, without inner joy, moksha kabhi nahi milega. That moksha's freedom. And as I'm moving toward it, I've got peace and joy. But if I can't even experience peace and joy because of I need you to act in a certain way, I'm enchained. I'm not free. Moksha means freedom, liberation. If I need you to act a certain way, I'm in jail. I'm the one who's chained and stuck. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.